This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 31 of the Yes Music Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved on the site www.yesmusicpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via RSS, via iTunes, via email to the blog posts and episode updates. You can read and then comment on show notes or blog posts. You can follow the show on Twitter at Yes Music Podcast. You can send an email to show@yesmusicpodcast.com. You can upload a file via the link on the right-hand side of the website, or you can leave a voicemail message and appear on the show yourself by calling 0844 579 6949 and using the mailbox number 39417. You can record a voice message straight onto the website using the record a message button on the extreme right-hand side, and more listeners are tuning in to the podcast on Stitcher.com. If you have a smartphone, you can download the Stitcher app for free. At AZGizmo on Twitter gets this week's prize for fact-checking. I made yet another blunder in the BBC Recordings episode when I referred to the Peter Banks Union Tour incident of 1994. It was, of course, 1991. So thanks at AZGizmo. The eagle-eyed amongst you will have seen a blog post I added to the site yesterday about a commenting service called Gravatar. If you sign up at gravatar.com, you can add a photo of yourself, your usual social media avatar, or any image you like, while not breaking copyright, of course, so that when you comment on blog posts or show notes on yesmusicpodcast.com, the image is displayed next to your name. This is how I add my photo when I reply to your comments. I love receiving your comments, and it would be great to replace the automatically generated icon with a proper avatar of the commenter. So why not give it a go yourself? Once you've set it up, it'll work on lots of different websites. Finally, before we get into this week's Yes Music, do keep listening to the whole episode, because I'll be explaining a special way you can get involved with a forthcoming episode after the featured music. I'd like to know what your Yes Fantasy Live ideas are. More on this later. So this week I'm taking a look at the additions which were made to the 90125 CD when it was remastered, expanded and re-released in 2004. 6 additional songs were added which give us a chance to hear some different versions of the main songs, as well as a couple of interesting proto-Yes tracks recorded by Kay, Rabin, Squire and White as Cinema before Anderson joined in to revive the Yes name. The first expanded track is the single edit of Leave It. It's labelled Single Remix, but it's actually only a few seconds shorter than the album track. It does come in at just under 4 minutes, and maybe that was the target. The album track is about 4 minutes 10 seconds long. If you'd like to compare them both and let me know where the edit happens, that would be great. I can't immediately pin it down. The sleeve notes claim that tracks 10 to 13 are performed by Kay, Rabin, Squire and White, but track 10 is Leave It, which definitely has Anderson on it, so I think this is a mistake. It's tracks 11 to 13, which were recorded in 1981, before Anderson came on board, I think. Track 11 is Make It Easy, a Rabin track, the start of which I knew before I heard this version, as I think it was used as a short linking instrumental on the 90125 Live video. This previously saw the light of day on the Yes Years boxed set, as did the next track, It Can Happen. It has a very attractive groove to it, with growling bass and a repeated keyboard motif. Rabin's solos in typically brilliant and virtuosic style over the top, and then there's a sudden change to a brief section of very rapid activity. Rabin retains his fast-moving feel, while the rest of the band establish a slower pulse. It's all very much in the 80s rock idiom, which is not necessarily a bad thing. The trademark Rabin vocals infused with soul and power appear in true stadium-filling mode. The chorus is too close to poodle-haired 80s pop songs for me. If this was intended to be transformed into a Yes song at some stage, maybe that's why it wasn't, and of course this is performed here by the Cinema lineup, so there's no real reason why it should sound anything like Yes. That was never really the intention, was it? As easygoing MOR 80s pop, this is just fine. I like it. There is some great Rabin-Squire harmonic interplay, and it goes without saying that Alan White fulfills his role perfectly. The chorus is extremely catchy, and Rabin's repeated guitar histrionics are brilliant. When the opening material reappears, it's clear that this is the best aspect of the song, so it's no surprise the band wanted to at least use this portion live. It's worthy of an airing or two. The chorus is perfect as the theme to some 80s American teenage rom-com, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The end of the song almost tips over into prog territory, but it's a bit late at that stage. Next up is the cinema version of It Can Happen. Tony Kaye adds a slightly comical little introductory feature which seems to have been cut from the album arrangement, and it's not really any loss, to be honest. The rest of the opening is largely unchanged, but has slightly different keyboard parts and lead guitar soloing. The verse is very different, though. Is that Chris Squire singing? The bridge and chorus are practically unchanged. It's fascinating to hear the original version. The verse even has completely different lyrics, and gives the song a completely different feel. I'm finding that I miss Anderson's vocals, though. Rabin's main solo is not quite as distinctive as the 90125 version either. I think there's more of a sitar sound missing as well in the ostinato pattern section. The vocal arrangements in the bridge and chorus are very similar, so it's interesting to note that these existed before Anderson's influence was felt. Overall, it's a good version, and historically very interesting to hear the genesis of the song. It's Over is my favourite of the added tracks. The opening reminds me of 80s songs like St. Elmo's Fire and Electric Dreams. It's huge fun from the opening bars onwards, a tour de force of Rabin 80s excess. Guitar, vocal and keyboards are like a textbook of how to write a hit in this decade. There are also a few references to straighter classic rock, for example in how the rippling keyboards appear under the main crashing chords around 1 minute 40 seconds, and in other places, but generally it's a fun-filled 80s extravaganza. The main guitar theme is a massive hook, and the track ploughs on with enormous momentum, benefiting from great Squire bass lines and super energetic white drumming. If anyone asks you what pop rock was all about in the 1980s, just play them this song. It certainly isn't Yes, but it certainly is good. Next up is the extended remix of Owner of a Lonely Heart. This track is labelled previously unissued, so I assume it didn't appear on the obligatory 12-inch version of the single. If you know what was on that single, please let me know. The opening of this version has been given the full Trevor Horn Art of Noise treatment. I was interested to read that actual samples from the 90125 recording sessions were used by Trevor Horn and the Art of Noise in their initial records. After an a cappella opening which states the main chorus refrain and then gets a computerized treatment, a synthesized version of the main riff appears in the same sampled wordless manner as other Trevor Horn masterpieces of the same era, like Close to the Edit. There is beatbox-style synthesized percussion, and the opening of the track is pure 80s dance music, with very little to do with Yes, even this Rabinized version of the band. Having said that, as an 80s teenager myself, I love this music and appreciate what Trevor Horn has done to the material, assuming it was indeed Trevor Horn who created this extended mix. Apart from the opening vocals, I don't think there are any Yes band members in this particular mix. It's all computer-generated, or at the very least sampled. The approach is much like a lot of 80s 12-inch extended remix of chart hits. The stereo is played with and fragments of the main song occasionally appear in distorted fashion. Overall, it's treated as an ostinato bass riff plus percussion with an aural playground above. There are 7 minutes 5 seconds of this computerized dance music, which sounds a bit like it's based on Owner of a Lonely Heart. I think it's quite ahead of its time, assuming it was recorded at the same time as the rest of the album. There have been many examples of this kind of borrowing in successful singles up until the present day, including, of course, the Max Graham version of Owner, which reached number 9 in the UK in 2005 and used the majority of the original song. The usual practice of 80s 12-inch remixes is not followed, however, here. The whole of the 7-inch version was usually played somewhere in the 12-inch version. Here we get practically none of the track itself. Finally, we reach Leave It, a cappella version. This was released on the 12-inch single of the same track, I think. It appears to be the same recording, but simply with the instrumental parts removed. This gives the opportunity to listen carefully to the vocal parts. It works surprisingly well as a piece in its own right. Listen to it a few times and you forget to imagine the drums and other instruments piling in. Certainly it's amazing to appreciate the power of the vocal parts and marvel at the sheer audacity of the production. It's like the segments in Making Of album programs, where the artist gets the opportunity to sit at the mixing desk and play with the faders. It's absolutely fascinating. Overall, then, the added tracks on this expanded version of 90125 give a fascinating insight into the genesis of some of the tracks. It would perhaps be interesting to compare these tracks to some of the contents of 90124, which was, of course, Trevor Rabin's early versions of some of the songs. There are a couple of tracks which are very much worth listening to, and the rest is interesting material as well. There's not a huge amount of exciting extra material for Yes fans, but certainly worthwhile checking these tracks out. So that's about it for this week. As promised, though, I'd like to finish by telling you a way in which you can get involved with a future episode of the podcast. I'd like you to imagine a Yes Fantasy Live situation. More than ever before at the moment, there are collaborative projects either confirmed or rumoured. I heard about the latest of these yesterday when Ken Fuller told me that Bill Bruford, Trevor Rabin, John Anderson and Rick Wakeman may be working together this year. What would that be like? So, if you could have engineered part of Yes's live history to include any lineup playing any kind of event, what would it have been? Would you have had Peter Banks actually walking out with the rest of the Union crew? What about Patrick Mraz returning at some point? Rick Wakeman playing keyboards on the Magnification Tour? Vangelis joining the band in the 70s? Or Trevor Horn returning to lead vocal duties in 2011? I have absolutely no doubt you can come up with much more creative ideas. So when you've designed your Yes Fantasy Live event, let me know what it is by leaving a comment on the Yes Fantasy Live blog post at yesmusicpodcast.com, by sending a tweet or direct message to at yesmusicpodcast on Twitter, by sending an email to show at yesmusicpodcast.com, by uploading an audio file or recording a voice message via the buttons on the site, or by leaving a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. Depending on how the ideas go, this might be next week's episode or sometime later. Just one rule, I'll only broadcast positive or humorous ideas. I'm sure you know what I mean. I'm really looking forward to what you come up with. So thanks very much indeed for listening again this week. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.